What's happening? It's the Wednesday, February 18th edition of the DRF Players Podcast, alongside Peter Thomas Fornital, who would be the DRF Tournament Editor, Michael Hogan, who would be the man behind DRF Formulator. I'm Matt Bernier. Fellas, how's everything going?
I'm playing a little hurt today.
Uh-oh.
I was trying to get the baby in and out of the stroller, and something popped in my back, and it's not pretty. It's not pretty.
We're talking lower back?
Lower back. Yeah. Lower back. The time-honored... time-honored play, so I'm a little ouchy, but I'm hoping, you know, some walk in the shed row a few days, and I'll be back out there on the track in the mornings coming soon.
Rest it up, always, you know, lay, if you can be flat as possible most of the time. That's usually always been my family's all hereditary back problems.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Has it struck you yet?
Oh, or? Yeah. I went to the doctor, I don't know, probably handful of years ago, because I was having sciatic problems.
Oof, and, too young for that.
Well, because I have 6 lumbar vertebrae instead of 5. And he said, you have 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag. And I said, he goes, you're kind of a freak. I said, thanks, man. Appreciate it. So, yeah, no, it goes on. So I can empathize with you. I feel bad. Mike, hopefully you're feeling all right.
Yeah, so far so good. I can't see Pete today, but that's okay.
The way that we have things set up in the studio to prevent kind of echoey noise, Pete has a styrofoam wall up in front of his face.
I kind of like it, actually.
He's barricaded in the corner. And
I think what we should do is we should put a paper bag over his head, like he's the unknown comic or something.
The unknown handicapper.
The unknown handicapper.
Right. Nobody's done that gimmick yet.
No,
there
you go.
We had the 4 public handicapper races last weekend. It was good racing. The weather played a factor in a couple of things. Oaklawn's card got canceled. They had to reschedule the Southwest Stakes. That'll be coming up this weekend. But
luckily, that was just on Monday, though,
that was
right?
On Monday, yeah. Right. But, you know, there was – Laurel had a little bit of issues. They canceled on Sunday. We were lucky to get the Fritchie in. And that was part of our 4 public handicapper races. The Fritchie was run. And, Pete, did you have this winner? Did you have Lady Sebelia?
I did have Lady Sebelia. I did. I thought it was a very honest effort. She really likes Laurel. That 99 buyer speed figure there matches her best effort. And I think that if you listen back to our analysis from the show, the best bit that people probably got out of it was the fact that we were all opposed to Sam's Sister, who finished off the board. I suppose you could conjure some excuses for Sam's Sister. The chart actually said she bobbled at the start. I didn't really see it.
She got bounced a little bit, and we talked about it. We watched it, and really, I don't think it was that big a deal.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, certainly the wide move didn't help. I mean, I think the fact of the matter is with Sam's Sister, she's okay, but like most horses, needs a good setup to look her best. Lady Sebelia got the good setup, did the business there. That wasn't a huge price or anything, but it's nice to have cashed in each of the first 2 weeks of the public handicapper prep for me.
She was definitely bet like she was live. I mean, the 5-2 floated up because I think early in the wagering she was
9-5.
Yeah, she was the same price as Sam's Sister.
Yeah, briefly. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and in fact, you missed my tweet. It was about 14 minutes to post. Princess Violet was 7-1.
Yeah,
I did see that tweet. Yeah. I did. I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked by that. But I think that corrected. Right?
Well, yes, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
I thought she ran well, too, considering I don't think that was normally how she would prefer to run, being as close to the pace as she was. Right. I thought it was a good ride from Jose Ortiz to at least kind of put her in a position where, you know what, if for some reason there isn't much speed going, which there really wasn't, you know. I mean, once the Wolfson horse didn't really break, it was the best behavior.
Yeah.
You know, Lady Sebelia kind of got out there and did her own thing. Mm-hmm. She sat just off one of the other ones, but she ran big. It was a big effort no matter what.
Yep.
And I'd like to see her go elsewhere now outside of Maryland. Maybe she comes to New York. Maybe she goes to Florida. I don't know. But
We'll see. I mean, she loves that track. So, you know, if there are races for her at Laurel, what's the point in shipping?
True.
But, you know, I mean, maybe the connections have some ideas in mind that they want to get, maybe a grade one in her and maybe even have ideas about Keeneland later in the fall.
As far as Sam's Sister, I think she is what she is. I think she ran a race, just not good enough. I mean, opposition to that kind of thought?
No, it wasn't what you'd call a great trip, but it wasn't.
I was going to say, you go back and you look at her La Brea and you look at her Santa Monica. I mean, it was the same race. Yeah. She ran the same race. She turns for home, 4-5 path. She put a run in, just wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm. This time they didn't back up this quite the
same. And now, do you happen to have the buyers in front of you?
I did write down, I took notes this week of just the winners.
Just the winners, because if she got a 99, that probably means that Sam's sister was right around, if I had to guess, 88, 87, which we had mentioned.
Right.
Her 3 7 furlong races were 87, 88, 88. I mean, she ran a race.
Yeah.
I just don't think she's gotten any better just yet, and she still can.
Right.
I mean, she's still lightly raced, all things considered. But
yeah, I mean, you know, the boy shipping 3,000 miles.
Not easy.
Yeah, it didn't really do her any favors. No. And, you know, I think she's still a fine horse. She's just one that I want. We all discussed we wanted to take a stab at beating at a short price. And, you know, luckily it worked out. And, hey, Pete, I didn't mention it to you, but I was telling Matt yesterday that I hit the try in that race by accident.
What did you do?
Well, since I noticed that we all had Princess Violet and Toasting as second and third, and we had different horses on top, what I did was I thought I would get a little cute and play our three picks to win, keying them as the winner, okay, and then with Toasting and Princess Violet in each spot for second and third. It was a $6 play for a dollar. I did it probably an hour or so before the race as I was walking to the grocery store on my phone. And after I placed the wager, I realized, boy, I had mistaken Toasting for the two horse. And so I did our three horses over 1-2 with 1-2.
Who was that expression?
The two and
was
that expression. Was
the two was 60 expression.
To one.
At 60-1. And so I get home later before the race goes off, and I realize, oh, I put in the wrong bet. So I put in the right bet. And then I have the choice of, do I cancel this wager and get $6 back? And I was like, no. Because if at 60-1, if this horse hits the board, that? I'm kicking
it.
Myself.
How about
I
that?
I love it. Hey, man, we've said it before on this show. I'd rather be lucky than good.
Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely.
Right.
If it leads to cashing a ticket.
And the way that you and I talked about it yesterday, you know, if let's say he had canceled the wager and it hit, would you really have been that happy about saving $6?
Right.
I mean, let's be honest.
I figured, you know, maybe the universe was trying to tell me something here. And,
that's hilarious.
Yeah. So
that horse actually
I got lucky,
well,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Charlton Baker.
Yeah.
So here are the buyers. Let's see. We were looking at Sam's sister. Actually improved her figure to a 92.
Really?
Okay.
Okay. So she ran better
so
than
your point about running a race, so certainly valid.
Yeah. You know, and who knows? Maybe she does step forward, like you say. The fact that she had to ship cross country, that's not an easy thing for a for any horse, let alone an inexperienced one.
Well, so. And, you know, I mean, she's based in Southern California, and she shows up at Laurel in 25-degree weather.
It's
so
cold, and there's moisture, and it's blech.
That's amazing how much that try came back with the with
yeah, I wasn't. Believe me, I was not complaining.
That is fantastic.
Three and change.
Yeah, what was it, Mike? Do you remember?
It was like $3.20 for a buck.
Not too bad. That's donate at least part of that money to your favorite equine aftercare.
Great, great
charity,
mistake.
I would
gotta
say.
gotta love when mistakes pay off.
Pay that one forward.
The second race to the public handicapper was the Cooper City Handicap at Gulfstream Park. I'm already sexy. Paid $4.40.
You guys saw what I did there, right?
You did.
You flipped.
There's been three times on this show where I've come on when we do the Friday show where we go over our picks for the public handicapper races. Three times now I've said, I'm torn between A and B. Three times I pick horse A. Three times horse B has now won. Best angle, Four Natal off.
Four Natal off.
Well,
winner.
So let me ask, were you doing that partly? Because when I saw the scratch of Granny's McKitten, I immediately thought, oh boy,
yes.
I'm already sexy is going to be a really short price.
Yes, I was convinced I'm already sexy was going to be even money, and I just decided I wanted to go for that. I'm kidding around. I don't think it was well, it's sort of the opposite of the other situation. This is a case where I think I did the right thing and got the wrong result. But though in truth, with his bet down as E.B. Ryder was. I mean, it's not like the 7-2 was any bargain.
I was going to say, that was the other thing.
No.
But I didn't know that in the morning
when
making the picks. But I did pretty much know at that point I'm already sexy was going to be evens or 6-5. And, you know, I also don't feel bad because she barely – I'm already sexy barely won.
Right.
You know, I still think I'm already sexy ran significantly better than Stop Talking Maria there, just because of the way the flow of the race went. Seemed like it was probably a speed favoring flow, and I'm already sexy had the wider trip chasing.
See, now I'm surprised you guys say that you think that the scratch of Granny Mac's kitten directly affected I'm already sexy's price. I feel like she would have been even money regardless whether Granny Mac's kitten was in it or not. I think you guys were the ones that took the brunt of it. With
maybe
Indy Rider getting bet.
Maybe.
Yeah, you might be right.
Maybe. I just thought Chad Brown in a state turf route stakes race in Southern Florida, that horse, I don't know if it would have been, you know, a co-favorite or anything, but I just thought that horse was going to take a fair amount of money, and I think a lot of it went to I'm Already Sexy and, I guess, to our horse.
Because I felt like you guys probably would have gotten six, maybe, yeah. And you got 3.5 to 1, whereas right. I thought all along I'm Already Sexy was going to be 7 to 5, and she went off.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show. You know? I said, is there any chance I'm Already Sexy's 4 to 1, thinking that they're wasn't. And then just, it was one of those things where the scratch was part of it, but it was more just, the more I looked at the race, it just was so obvious that that's where the money was going to go. It's the toughest thing in contest formats, like the all-in format we run here sometimes in the DRF family of contests, where part of what you're doing in a contest where you have to put in the picks before you see the odds, and it's the reason why I don't like this format. To me, some people love it. They love the idea of just, you're picking the winners. There's a purity to just, I'm picking horses, you're picking horses. Let's see who's picking horses that pay better on this day. I get that. I get that there's a purity to it. But to me, that extra mental gymnastics you have to go through when you have to pick in a vacuum and you don't know the exact price, it fundamentally takes some of the fun away for me.
Well, and I guess I don't approach this the same as I do other contests, because I look at this and say, at the end of the day, you know, you gotta pick winners in this kind of contest. You do need prices. But unless there's a race where I can, you know, if I'm looking at it and I think that 5 different horses can win, then I'll start to look for, and I'm not just going to take what I think is going to be the shortest price, but like in a race like this, where I hated the race. I hated the race. I thought the most likely winner was I'm Already Sexy. I'll take
you
my...
You hated the race and you're the only one who had the winner.
Well, but like you say, though, I mean, for the, but it was, it wasn't because I was, you know, proud that I'm playing, you know, even or 6 to 5. It was more because I don't like the race. Who do I think is going to win?
And there's and that's a theory people use in Public Handicapper. And I've interviewed the winners of the last bunch of contests for the blog at drf.com. And I'm trying to remember who it was. Oh, I'm spacing on the name, which is terrible. But a recent winner of one of their contests said that works into his thinking, is he'll look different races. He'll have different goals, and he'll keep that number moving forward.
Sure.
We'll be happy to pick favorites in the races that he doesn't see are open, and then also try to mix in the prices.
That's kind of how I look at this thing. I mean, if it goes back to the Malibu, I picked Shared Belief. I didn't necessarily think, you know, I knew he was going to be an awful price, but at the end of the day, I thought he was the most likely winner.
Yeah, and it's relative. Like, to me, really, I mean, awful price, it's like, he was a short price. Was he an awful price? How far off of that price was his actual chance of winning? I'd say it represented accurately his chance of winning. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it was an overlay. I came on the show for Shared Belief before that, and we talked about the possibility of getting 8 to 5, and I said, wow, 8 to 5, that would be great value. The horse is 50-50 to win. Horse paid, what, 4?
In the Malibu?
In the Malibu, yes. No, I think he was 4 to 5, wasn't he?
I think he was 4 to 5 in the Malibu.
Yeah. You're thinking of the San Antonio, maybe.
Oh, yes, you're absolutely right. I'm talking about the San Antonio.
San Antonio.
But the fact is that in both instances, I don't think the price, short as it was too far off the statistical chance of the horse winning the race.
Yes. No, I don't disagree with that. I think that's a fair way of explaining it.
And the flip side to this is, going back to the Cooper City, looking at the way the odds were playing out a few minutes to post. It, to me, if you were playing in a regular type of, you know, mythical $2 win place contest, the clear contest horse in that race was Stop Talking Maria. Everybody else was a relatively short price or a huge price. And from a square price contest standpoint, like, if I was able to put my pick in right then, my pick would have been Stop Talking Maria. But in advance of the race, I couldn't really make enough strong enough of a case for her to win.
And Stop Talking Maria was what, about 9 to 1, something like that?
Eight, nine. Yeah.
I can't remember.
And further on, EB Rider, I mean, I would have thought that adding the blinkers would have made for a little bit more of an aggressive run, but it ended up being a very, very passive run against the flow. I think EB Rider can be given another chance, especially in a spot where it looks like there might be a little more obvious pace, right?
Okay, yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, well, I won't disagree, but I'll want a bigger price.
Oh, of course.
And maybe we'll get one because of it.
Indubitably will. That's usually how that thing works. Just because a horse gets a bad setup, people just looking at the running line don't necessarily do that extra level of work to realize that.
Right. The third race was the Essex from Oaklawn Park. It was right on Curlin coming back in his first route as a four-year-old. He was bet down to 4-5. He ran second to Golden Lad. I've never, ever liked Golden Lad. I don't think he's all that good. But he was good enough to win that day.
Earned 102 buyer, absolutely perfect trip. I had two questions for you guys about the race. One, did Brian Curlin do something weird with those leads late in there? Did you notice anything funny?
I'd have to go back and watch. Okay. Saturday was, you know, at this point I'm still...
It's a blur.
I'm almost recovered fully from Saturday. But, yeah, a lot of that is still... I went back and watched, you know, the El Camino Real and a couple other ones. But
sure.
The Essex is not one that I've gone back and seen again.
The other thing was the Inquiry, which I thought was just... it just made me think it was worth discussing. I mean, in my opinion, it wasn't enough for a takedown. I mean, it's not like he came over three or four paths impeding the big race favorite and eliminating the other pace or anything.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about there.
By the way, I'll never get
say, what race are you talking about?
Let it die.
I have no idea.
But no, it was a modest interview.
It was, yeah. I didn't even know what they were looking at, to be honest.
It's pretty clear out of the gate what they were looking at, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, right. Well, sure. I mean, I see that sort of thing happen all the time. Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, not to continue to harp on this, but what that to me was in reality is the way a lot of the apologists describe the Breeders' Cup Classic. The kind of interference out of the gate that actually does happen every day.
Right.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Right.
What it looked like there at Oakland.
Sure.
Rather than left blinker, three or four pass over. Right. Not that we're still talking about that. How many months later on? Jesus. The fourth race was the El Camino Real Derby. This one actually had Derby points up at Golden Gate Field. Meta Boss was the winner.
Before you go on, you're not going to mention that I was the only one that picked Golden Lad to win?
Oh, you're
going to have
props
to say it. I didn't realize that.
You deserve props.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry. I see both of you are in the red, and I'm the one back in the positive on top. So I didn't realize
we'll
you guys picked
Well, yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. You were trying to jump. You were trying to jump to it, you know. But
I wanted to jump to this race for a different reason than what you think. But
yeah, it's certainly a more interesting race, and you know, my whole feeling was I wanted to beat Right on Curlin against older horses going a route, and Golden Lad likes the track, and now he's got two graded stakes wins at Oaklawn. So
you got a square price too, right? 4-1.
It was bet down late because he was about 6 through most of the wagering. So square price, I'll take it. And
that Hogan money came in late.
The Hogan money.
I have to say, I did not. I kept my profits from the Fritchie try, and did not dip into that race. So.
We just talked about what the result of the El Camino was. What did you think of the race itself? Because I thought Conquest Typhoon, at first we thought that the ride was good on Smith for going after it because there was no pace signed on. When I watched it again, I thought it was a bad move.
Well, I mean, I feel for Smith. I think he was in a tough situation, and I think that he felt like he had to do his own dirty work. And I feel like that he did that had to cost him late. I'm always going to be forgiving of riders who make errors of aggression over errors of passivity. I think too often you see jockeys who are too passive. I think he was trying to win the race. He thought he was on the best horse. Clearly it didn't work out. I think if he had to do it over again, he might do it differently. But I don't think that means it was – I think it's easy to say that with the benefit of hindsight. Do you disagree?
No, I just thought it was one of those things where this is a horse who in the past his best run has been one move at the end. Maybe the distance would have been a problem regardless of the scenario, but when you see the winner the way that he won with that one move, and Conquest Typhoon was up on the pace throughout while wide at a mile and an eighth, and then down the lane he really, you know, started laboring. I put it this way, I'm going to give him a pass for this one. I thought it was good that he hung on for third.
I think it's very possible we're looking at a false race as slow as the pace was there.
I thought it was honest for Golden Gate.
To be honest, I don't follow it. I was going more visually, channeling my own inner Trevor Demmon. I don't have pace figures for Golden Gate.
It looked slow. Whenever you look at the fractions at Golden Gate, you need to look at them with a grain of salt because they are. You will rarely ever see a sub 25 opening quarter. You'll rarely see sub 50 for the half.
Okay.
It's almost all. I mean, that's the Tapita. It's basically like a grass race.
Yeah. And I mean, we should talk a bunch more about Metaboss. I mean, the question going in was, you know, is he going to improve on dirt or will he improve on synth? And you know, answered that with a resounding yes. Adding 10 points to his best buyer speed figure, got an 85 there, and it was just visually impressive. There was a point in that race where if there was in running wagering, he might have been 50-1.
I we're watching the race here in the studio, and I turned to Dan and I go, I'm dead on the far turn.
Yeah, Solis went like Solis was 12 all wide.
Solis was, well, no, it wasn't even the wide
looked,
move.
Yeah,
it
he
was
done before the wide
all,
move.
Solis
yeah.
was all yeah. over him midway in the far turn. I go, he ain't moving. He's backing up.
And I thought it was a great wide move. It was the kind of wide move where he kind of spun off the
yes.
turn. I thought
mm-hmm.
he didn't lose much meaningful ground and just got out there in a place to have clear running. I thought it was a very good work by you. It was Solis up.
It was Alex Solis, yeah. And no, I thought all of it was really good. Credit to Jeff Bondi for having him ready to go. Bondi's a big Northern California guy, so it's nice to see him win their biggest race.
Great story on the ownership of this horse. Have you seen this
story? I just found out about it.
Yeah, Rich Nilsson, who's actually qualified
like
for the NHC
Rich.
About 12 or 13 times, industry veteran, part of a group of owners on Facebook, I think called the Homeless Handicappers.
Something like that, yeah.
And they went in on this horse, and they're having great success. I think it's fantastic, and definitely Metaboss, an easy horse to root for. And I feel bad. I mean, Matt obviously gets big props for coming up with the winner at a nice price there. But on the podcast, you know, you talked about that 9-3 exacta.
I was so angry as we're sitting here watching the race. Yeah. I was so angry because I
3-9 it was.
It
not
was.
9-3.
Well, it was. I think it was it $20 straight or $10 straight. I think it was only 10 because I had 20 to win on him and I had $10 straight 3-9 exacta. So I'm watching. I know Metaboss has won at this point. I'm going, hang on for a second.
You looked real good, 50 from home.
And then credit to one of the Hollendorfers. I thought that other horse, who was it? Not Stan.
It's Rhea Antonio's brother.
Cross the line?
Cross the
yeah.
line, is that who it was? Mm-hmm. I thought that horse ran really well.
Ran great. Yeah.
Ran really well.
Yeah.
And I did not give him nearly the amount of credit I should have or chance prior to the running.
So I was hoping, as confident as you were about the cold 3-9, that you had this, that you had at least the $178 try for a buck, but you didn't back it up at all.
No, all I did for the race was because I was in such a recently we talked about it a little bit. Like when you get into a funk and you can't like snap out of it, the process, the handicapping, and all that for me, I feel as it's as good as it's ever been. But I wasn't picking any winners. And we got to that point during the day where Dan and I would do little contests throughout the day on DRF Live.
How'd that go this week?
He ended up with, I think, $65, and the only winner I had was Metaboss.
Gotcha.
So 24 or whatever it is. But I just got to the point where I was like, this is the one. He's got to get me over the hump because I was just like not doing much as far as my own wallet is concerned. You know, like I said, the analysis and whatnot, a lot of things are happening the way that I expect them to. It's just I'm not picking any winners. And I'm hopeful that was the turning of the tide.
Sometimes that's
slump
all
buster.
It takes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's all it takes sometimes is that one nice winner, and you had money on the nose.
So, and that was it. So that's the only reason that I only went as far as win and a straight.
Gotcha.
Cold exacta.
Still, you caught the win. If you know, not to pit.
Not that the cold exacta. I'm still a little bit bent that it was $270 that it would have been coming back.
It was
to
a
me.
Tough way watching it. Watching it, I had a lot of empathy for you.
It was tough.
The end of
that's
that
all
race.
Right, though.
It was tough.
Well, and it seemed like Smith kind of wrapped him up a little when he knew he wasn't going to win.
I kind of got a similar vibe where, and I don't even know that it was because he knew he wasn't going to win. I think maybe the horse was empty.
Well, perhaps.
And, you know, it
doesn't
do any good to keep
sure.
riding him if he's got nothing
right.
left.
But, you know,
especially if it's a horse that you think could be, you
course.
Know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he, and to go back to what Pete was saying, when I watched the race, I felt like he rode him like he thought he was on the best horse. He didn't mind going wide on the first turn, didn't mind going wide on the second turn because he thought he was best. And then when he realized that another horse passed him, it's not that he stopped on him, but he wasn't driving as hard as he could have to get second money.
I think perhaps. if anyone's familiar with Golden Gate, at the top of the lane in 90% of the races, there are five horses across,
yeah.
and it looks like anything
yeah.
can happen.
Right.
And rarely do you see a horse go gate to wire or on the front end be able to take them. You know, we talked about it afterward. I find it hard to believe that Corey Lannery wanted to be on the lead with Indian Naughty. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe that that was the plan, but because no one went, how does the 30,000 maiden not go to the lead stretching out from six furlongs? You know what I mean? You look at all those different kinds of things. I thought it was an interesting race. I'm going to give it more credit than I probably ever thought I was going to. And we'll talk about it when we talk about our Derby stuff coming up after tournament talk. But we'll touch back on this race in particular because I think it could be something interesting going forward.
I had another comment on it, but it sounds like it might go better then. I was just going to say that it didn't look the winner's effort, while taking nothing away from it, just didn't look dirty to me, if you know what I mean.
We'll talk about it when we bring up the other part.
We'll put a pin in it and we'll,
Well, and we did. You know, I think it's worth mentioning. We kind of mentioned it without putting a bow on it, but we, as the three of us, swept the four races. You got two, Pete had one, and I had one.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Very cool.
I think that's the first time we've done that since we've started.
Four baggers.
That's good. Hopefully some folks out there made more money than we did on
Yeah.
that.
And as far as PH is concerned, we're all right, like, plus or minus $1.50 for $2, which is good because the leader is still at, like, $28.80. So like,
all to play for.
Yeah, I mean, we got a long way to go.
And the last thing I'll say about the El Camino Real is, did you see what happened on Sunday at Golden Gate?
I did not.
So
is this with the gate?
Yeah, they're very fortunate that this happened the next day. So the first race on Sunday was a route, two-turn route race. The tractor didn't work. Didn't start.
Oh, no.
So the horses come into the stretch, and the starting gate is still there.
They blew the siren. And
yeah. So they fortunately, they pulled everybody up in time, and the race was ruled a no contest. It could have been worse. All they did was refund the money, but it's good that didn't happen with their biggest race of the year.
Could you even imagine? Could you imagine? You talk about you would lose all of your Derby points.
Yeah.
You would never, ever allow that ever again.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you say, I did hear about that. So
the replay is up. There's a story, but small story about it on DRF. And
as long as nobody got hurt,
no one got hurt. The horses are fine. Yeah.
Something else to consider, and Dan and I have slyly been looking at this for some time now. I've played three times, I think, over, just because it's not my forte. It's not the track I normally look to. Their little pick six jackpot sequence is up to almost $300,000. No one's really giving it enough credit, and it's going to be difficult to scoop it.
It's not a regular pick six with a carryover. It's like a Rainbow Six kind of thing.
Right, it's like Gulfstream.
You need to have one ticket.
Right, okay. So which is going to make it extremely difficult to scoop because their field sizes are generally six and seven horses.
Yeah, so small.
But everyone belly aches about the takeout and this, that, and the other thing, and how, it's a sucker bet. It's not a sucker bet. If you believe that, you're not using your head, you're not breaking it all down, because now you're actually getting positive returns on this thing, where a rather chalky sequence is paying $1,500. Like, for a 20-cent base minimum, I would encourage everyone to at least take a look at it.
Yeah, no, that's reasonable to me, especially if there's people chasing trying to have the one number, and you happen to like a lot of logical favorites.
And let's be honest, a lot of people just automatically, when you see Russell Bays, you throw him on the ticket. Or, you see Hollendorf, you throw him on the ticket. Well, even if you're just being that simple and looking at things, put a $12 ticket in. You get a shot.
Yeah.
I just, Dan and I have been looking at it for a couple weeks now. I think when it got to around 100,000, we started eyeing. We said, all right, if it stays through till like El Camino Real day, they'll get a big pump in that. It's not going to get hit that day because there's going to be so many people looking at it with those such short fields, unless something crazy, crazy happens. But it's just something to keep an eye on.
I like it. I'm always up for looking at a new interesting bet, and I contend that the pick fours and pick sixes, they remind me of handicapping tournaments. I think Steve Christ has said this many times. They sort of function as a mini tournament in and of themselves, where you look to survive in advance and hopefully get better equity than just in your average at the windows wagers.
That's right. But in respect to tournaments, we have tournament talk.
Yeah, we're going to – this week, it's funny. The big story over the weekend, if folks didn't see, our buddy Jonathan Kinchin, we interviewed him on the show last week. The man won again. Jonathan, when are you going to give somebody else a tournament?
Not just one.
he won. That's right. He qualified on NHCQualify.com and also won outright the DRFQualify.com tournament, meaning that he will be out there. He spent his $80 and he will be out there at Santa Anita with his $3,500 buy-in paid for. And I encourage folks to take a look at DRFQualify.com this weekend. We're going to be having events for both the Gulfstream contest and the Santa Anita contest. I'm not sure which is on which day, but if you go on to DRFQualify.com, you can check that out. Also, NHCQualify.com on Saturday, February 21st. Yet another NHC qualifier. Buy-in's $165 and up to five NHC spots will be awarded there. I'm not sure if we have anything going on the BC Qualify site this weekend. I will take a quick look at that. But in addition to Kinchin, the other hottest handicapper on the NHC Tour so far this year is a guy named Roger Satina. Roger has yet to qualify for the NHC this year, but he's got multiple top 20 finishes. Actually, he has two top 20 finishes and a top 30 finish in the three NHC events he's played in. He has a terrific backstory, and I had a chance to sit down with him this week. I'm here with Roger Satina for this week's edition of Tournament Talk. Roger, I'm not sure too many of the fans out there know your heart-wrenching story of the 2013 NHC. Start off by telling us what happened to you there over those couple of days.
Well, I remember the first day. I didn't do great. I think I had about $60. And coming into the second day, you know, I was determined to try to get up into it. It was the old two-day format, so I did catch a big winner, a horse called Awfully Fast, which was the 1 year that they allowed one double bet for a winning place, and he was a cap horse. And that, like, vaulted me to the lead. And I alternated a lot. I had a lot of winners that second day. Another big price at Santa Anita, 17-1. And it was getting down to the last 2 or 3 hours, and it was probably the most difficult couple hours ever in playing horses. And I remember getting down to the fairgrounds. I had a bullet left. I bet a race and did nothing. And then it was 7 minutes to the last race of the contest at Santa Anita. And I looked up at the board and noticed that Jim Bennis was about $1.40, I believe, behind me, or $2 or something like that. But there was also a bunch of people in third, fourth, and fifth, which were in the $20 range. So I decided to try to protect myself the best I could. It was a sloppy track, Santa Anita, a bunch of first-time starters. I think only two horses had run before. So I, being a long shot player, I bet a long shot who didn't run at all. And race went off, and Mike Mitchell had a 9-1 shot that won the race. And I looked at my buddy Frank Sorensen, who we go all the tournaments with, and I'm like, yeah, that could be a problem. So thinking that someone maybe in third, fourth, or fifth had this long shot, I never thought in a million years that the guy behind me would bet the favorite. It just never occurred to me.
And the favorite got second to the Mitchell 9-1?
Yeah, the favorite got second. And the funny thing was, is this horse totally blew the turn. And if that horse didn't blow the turn, she would have got second. And it would have been all good for me. So I remember waiting for, you know, to be official. And Joe Scanio is another friend of mine. Of course, you know Joe.
Joe was at the final table this year.
Yeah, we did great this year. But, you know, we were sitting there. I'm like, all right, did anybody have this horse? And Joe Scanio was like, well, that's the guy in fifth over there. And the guy's thrown his program and stuff up. He didn't have it. And then, you know, Joe was pointing out, you know, the other two people because he knew them. And you could tell just by their face that they didn't have them. And then some guy walked over to me and said that Bennis had bet the favorite and beat me by $1.40. And my friend Frank was so mad. He went down to the race book. I think to play Sam Houston or something that was running that night. He was just, he was adamant. And I just stood there and was like, okay, the reality hadn't set in yet. And when they put it up, it was a little disheartening, to say the least.
How does it feel to lose a couple hundred grand by $1.40?
Yeah, it didn't feel great, but you know what? I went there without 200 grand in my pocket and came home with that. So
it's a good,
all relative, really.
It's a good attitude. Well, you're off to an amazing start on the NHC Tour this year. You were the leader heading into this weekend. I assume after Jonathan Kinchin capturing his second NHC qualification of the year last weekend, he'll be up and near tied with you. But talk to me about what's been going on so far on the tour this year.
So, you know what it is with me is when I play, when I try to play tournaments and bet cash, it never works. And 2 years at the two years ago at the NHC, I didn't make one bet in 2 days, and I did great. And for some reason, the last 2 years, I just couldn't keep away. So, coming home this year, disappointed, had a bad showing. So, you know what? I'm just going to bet tournaments this year. I'm going to stay away from the cash. When I'm playing the tournaments, that's all I'm going to do. So the first week, I did really well. Finished eighth. With good showing. I was real happy with that. Being the weather's been so horrible here in New York, not a bad thing to do on a Saturday.
No.
When it's freezing. So I came back the next week and did really well again. I think I missed qualifying in fifth by $1.40.
A familiar number.
Yeah, yeah, it sure is familiar, huh? I remember the last race at Santa Anita, I had bet 7-1 shot in the race, and everybody ahead of me was on the favorite, who just, I can't remember, Finnegan's Wake, who just wins constantly.
Yes.
And I actually got put up for second, which moved me up, but typical story, $1.40.
But still, with those two showings, to have that many tour points this early in the year, are you thinking at all about either making a run for the tour or trying to qualify for the NHC via tour points, or are you going to definitely make the push to go through the front door? What are your tournament plans from here?
I'm really determined to. I've finished in the top 20 twice so far, which to me is a pretty big accomplishment.
It's great,
and I'm really determined to go for it this year. And then last Saturday, I was in about 29th place, going into the last race at Santa Anita, and like the one who's Cap, who I thought had a shot, but I really thought the 8 was the horse to beat, and I molded over, and I went for the long one, and if I would have bet the 8, I would have finished 15th, and 1,800 tour points would have been nice too, but
yeah,
went for the Cap.
Being as early as... Yeah, that's right. And as early as it is in the year, you know, plenty of opportunities. Now, I recall from previous interviews with you that you are someone who is loath to play a favorite. Is there any situation where you will consider playing a favorite in a contest?
Oh, very, very rarely. I mean, last Saturday they had the race from Gulfstream that was part of the contest, and it was a 5-horse field. And Merry Meadow won. I just can't get myself to do it. Wound up betting the 7, hoping she could split the favorites, because she was 20-1. Thought she was third best, and she finished third.
Yeah, well.
But if she would have won second, it would have been the biggest price on the board. So.
Right. Well, that's a great point. That sometimes by playing a price, you don't even have to finish first to get more points. So.
Perfect example is Saturday. I finished 29th. I didn't have one winner. I had 5 or 6 seconds that were all big prices. So, you know, if one of them wins, it's a different story.
That's amazing. Talk to me about your handicapping methodology a little bit. How do you come up with all these price horses?
I use a lot of things. I use Formulator. I use Racing Flow. I use Thoroughgraph. And I also, through Formulator, keep a lot of notes on horses and on race cards, and I'm a big track bias guy. I really believe in it. So it's really a combination of all those things.
Sure. I think most of our listeners know about sheet methodology, and they certainly know about Formulator, which we're talking about all the time. But to tell them a little bit about what Racing Flow and what Jake Jacobs and Phil over there are trying to do with their product.
Well, the good thing about their product is you can download it onto Formulator. So what it will do for you is it'll show you in the past performances, it'll show you what their opinion of the bias was on the track, dirt, or grass that day. And also a big thing is the flow of the race, where was the pace really slow? So they have negative and positive numbers. So if, for instance, if the bias number is positive 200 or just 200, that refers to being a closer bias. And minus 200 would be a speed bias, and same thing with the flow. And really, it helps with the bias, but I watch a lot of the bias, track bias stuff myself and keep notes. The flow really helps a lot because it really, you know, if the flow is minus 200 and a horse was a deep closer, they're really at a huge disadvantage.
Sure, so you can see things that aren't in the PPs, and I love that point you made about how it uploads so neatly into Formulator. That's great.
It really is a great product.
So talk to me about your plans for playing in contests for the rest of the year. What does your schedule look like?
So I'm going to keep, you know, I live near Monmouth, so the Monmouth contests are definitely the best because they're close to home. I can almost walk if I wanted to, which is great. So Brian Skirkett does a great job over there at Monmouth, and his contests are great.
There's one coming up this weekend, right?
There is, and I will definitely be there, and I will be playing NHCqualified.com also.
Excellent. Any other plans to go to any specific tournaments?
My friend Frank and I are thinking about Wager to Win at Treasure Island.
Nice.
Yeah. The interesting thing is they're somehow restricting it to only 50 people this year, it says on the website. I'm not really sure why. Maybe they're not going to set the ballroom up, so I need to get some more information. But, you know, three contests 3 days in a row with four trips each day is appealing that you can get three back-to-back like that.
Yeah, though, that sounds great.
Yeah, we were there last year. Had a great time. So probably do that. And all the Monmouth ones, going to try to go to the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland. New York has got one, Wood Memorial Day, which... it's interesting. I'm probably definitely going to go to that aqueduct. It's interesting that New York hasn't posted the normal contest they have yet this year. I'm wondering if they're going to change their methodology a little bit.
They've been approved for live bankroll, so maybe that is going to change the schedule. But we'll have to give a phone call over there and ask and report back. But Roger, thanks so much for coming on the show today and taking time out. We will be following your exploits on the NHC Tour this year and beyond.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it.
So there we have it.
Roger Satina, a man who knows what it's like to lose out on $500,000 by a $140.
Brutal. Brutal. I mean, it really, when you hear that, that's tough to come back from.
The amazing thing is he actually likes talking about it, I've noticed. Like, he tells the story in great detail, but it's not like he's reliving some crime against him. He's at the same time, I mean, I think he's a glass is half full type of guy who looks at it as the time he went to Vegas and walked away with $200,000. Which is certainly a healthier attitude.
I mean, yeah, if you want to be positive and put a positive spin on things, that's the way to do it. That surely is the way to do it. But God bless him. He handled that much better than I would have.
But he's one of the guys. He's a handicapper's handicapper. When I go around and talk to other players, regulars on the tour, about who they want to hear interviewed on the DRF pod, Roger's the name that's come up several times. So happy to put him in there, and it'll be fun to follow him this weekend at Monmouth and throughout the rest of the season.
Now, right before we get into the Derby discussion, before we wrap things up, I'm looking on the results because I hope I did not jinx this thing. Did they run on Monday? Did they run on President's Day up at Golden Gate? Because I didn't get an email prompting the carryover for Monday. I got it from Sunday into Monday. So I'll be really, really bent if this thing got hit.
That would be amazing. You would have
thought
that would
not.
Would
that would not be amazing, my friend. That would not be amazing.
Amazing in the true sense of it.
In the true sense, it would be. The 20-cent jackpot pick six. So just to give you a vague idea, It paid $701, okay? $701. You had an $8 horse. You had a $6 horse. You had a $5 horse. You had a $5 horse. You had an $11 horse. Oof. Mm-hmm. And you had a $4 horse.
Chalk City.
That paid $700 for a 20-cent minimum. So
that was the 20-cent iteration paid $700?
$700.
That's good.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, so that's my thought looking at that kind of a thing. Especially for people on a budget. I know playing six races in a row and trying to hit that may seem a little bit daunting, and it is. I mean, it's difficult. You got to hit six in a row. But if you're going to play a 50-cent pick four, why not at least entertain the idea of a 20-cent pick six?
Well, if you're playing Golden Gate.
Well, that's my point, though. Like, at least, you should at least take a look at it, you know, rather than just, you know, poo-poo it and be like, if it's Golden Gate, I don't look at it. Well, certain times, you know, there are opportunities that present themselves that you need to look at.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't play Golden Gate regularly, but these are the kind of opportunities that would certainly make me take a second look. And I think that, you know, as handicappers, we have to continually be looking for new opportunities and fun challenges. I mean, that's part of the game, too, is keeping things fresh and interesting. And I'm very intrigued. And perhaps when I'm out in California in a couple of weeks.
Get involved.
Why not maybe take a look and get involved? The races are nicely staggered with the Santa Anita ones. I'm going to be out there for the betting challenge on the 14th and 15th. And I'll take a look, especially if that carryover is still going. So it did, obviously, with that payout, it carried.
It carried,
so what's the Do you have a total number?
I don't.
It's over 300, we think?
Yeah, it's got to be, because the email I got Sunday night was saying 294,000 going into Monday. They ran on Monday. So I would imagine when they pick up, if they ran Monday, they'll probably pick up on Friday. They won't go on Thursday. You know, you can find those numbers out there somewhere. So let's do Derby Talk.
Let's do it.
Now, this weekend is going to be critical going forward. Because
it even got bigger with the Southwest now being this weekend.
Being rescheduled to this weekend. So we have at Gulfstream, we have the Fountain of Youth. At Fairgrounds, we have the Risen Star. And at Oaklawn, we have the Southwest. They're all Derby points races. They're all major, you know, situational things as far as jockeying for position as far as points are concerned.
Upstart coming back, right?
Upstart.
On everybody's top five except for the three of us.
The Fountain of Youth is a salty little race. It's a fun race. I don't know if you...
I'm excited.
I haven't really looked yet. Who else is showing up off the top of your head?
We have Upstart.
Frosted.
We have Frosted. We have Bluegrass Singer.
Gorgeous. Well, yeah, so it's five horses, I think, from the Holy Bowl?
Coming from the Holy Bowl. Okay. Juan and Bina. Fromento.
Yep.
The new shooter that's most intriguing, arguably, is Gorgeous Bird.
Well, and it's a knockout for Todd.
It's a knockout for Todd.
It's
a coming
fun race.
In. It's a knockout. It's 2-for-2, undefeated in his career. Gorgeous Bird aired last time out while we were out at the NHC. He ran on the undercard. He won for fun, won by like seven. It should be a fun race. It'd be interesting to see how that goes. The Risen Star's got a bunch of...
Imperia, who's on
Imperia is
lists.
Making his three-year-old debut. Mike Smith is riding Imperia. International Star will be back in that spot, who currently is either first or second as far as Derby points are concerned. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. And then as far as Oaklawn's concerned, I don't know. Now that it's been rescheduled again.
Are they going to redraw, presumably?
I assume they'll redraw, but I know J.S. Bach had been included in the Risen Star lineup. Now he was supposed to run in the Southwest. Maybe they change that now that Southwest is going to be on Sunday. I don't know. You got to pay attention. Go on DRF.com. They'll have all that stuff up there for you. Do your top fives change after this past weekend at all, Mike?
No.
Pete?
No change.
Me neither.
I mean, my big change was from the previous week with the Texas Red News. Did we talk about that at all?
Yeah, we talked about it. And, I mean, it's unfortunate, and I think the odds are against him at this point.
That was my feeling. I mean, hopefully it's the kind of – hopefully with the bottom that he has on him, he's the kind of rare horse that can deal with a setback. But with so many interesting horses to potentially put in one's top five, I thought that was enough to give him.
And the latest I heard is they're talking about the possibility of now just training him up to the Derby.
No. For real?
For real.
It would be bold.
For real.
It would be bold. Again, this is much easier for me to say than anything. So the injury is clearly significant enough. I mean, it's not a major injury, but it's enough of a setback where they're talking like that. I would look at it and say, let me try and run him in the Pat Day on Derby Day. Let's plan that as the interim. and then you either try to wheel him back in the Preakness or you plan for the Belmont.
The Pat Day is the race formerly known as the Derby Trial, but now moved to the Derby Undercard.
It's on the Derby Undercard. Okay. It's one turn mile for 3-year-olds.
Yeah.
So that, easy for me to say, but if clearly it looks like things are not stacking up well, the idea of training up to a mile and a quarter race doesn't seem like it would work.
Yeah, you never know. I suppose you never know. You know, I mean, the revolutionary.
Maybe he's a super horse. I don't know.
Yeah, you see horses in other countries, for example. You'll see things that training wise you could never see happening here, and sometimes these things seem crazy because they're so new and they can work out. But boy, that would make it tough to bet with much confidence in my opinion.
I'll go on the record and say it's just flat out crazy. I mean, you've got a Breeders' Cup winner, you've got nearly the champion 2-year-old who has a setback preparing for probably the most grueling stretch of 3-year-old races there are. Just give the horse a little time. No need to rush it. This horse can be just a real force on the scene. You don't have to shoot for the first Saturday in May, you know?
Now, let's just for fun, think about this, too, like kind of what you're talking about. Say he wins. Say they train him up to the Derby and he wins. You can wheel him back in the Preakness?
Yeah, then what?
He's going to bounce to the freaking moon. I mean, he's going to run last.
Right.
You know? So, yeah. Again, if I were the owner, the owners, there's a bunch of them, run him in the Pat Day and point to the Belmont.
Fair enough.
That's how I would go about it. Yeah. Now, let's get back to the real thing that I want to talk about. You brought up that you didn't think that the El Camino Real didn't look like anything.
Didn't look like it played out more like a grass race or way more like a grass race or a synth race, which obviously it was, than a dirt race. It didn't give me any great hope that Metaboss would definitely transfer that form to dirt. I'm not saying they shouldn't try. I'm not saying I'm right about this, but it just nothing about it to me, just visually, despite my heart loving the story and wanting the horse to go on and be a dirt horse, my eyes didn't see much that suggested to me that he would.
You?
You know, I thought it was impressive. I think going into the race, and maybe it was a little bullheaded of me, but I was just thinking there was no horse, regardless of how they ran, that I really thought was going to make a dent on the Triple Crown scene coming out of that race. And so even though he probably couldn't have won much more impressively, I just don't know about 10 furlongs on dirt, you know, 3.5 months from now.
Now, I think the most interesting thing for me going forward is he'll go to Turfway Park for the Spiral. The Great War is there. You'd have to think the connections of Bolo, after seeing Metaboss do that, who Bolo beat by 2.5-3 lengths, I mean, beat him pretty handily, they would be nuts not to send him to Turfway, where you're going to have that transition where, you know what, let's not try the dirt right now. But all of a sudden, the Turfway series of races, I'm sure you're going to have whoever wins the Palm Beach down at Gulfstream will be sent up there for that race. All of a sudden, the Turfway races, although maybe they may not play out to be Derby races necessarily, like proper Derby contenders, the Spiral could end up being a tremendous race if all this shakes down. I mean, we got a ways to go. I just think it would be a fascinating race to see all these horses showing up for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know if any of them are likely to crack my top five. I mean, I guess we'll see.
I will say, after watching him,
Metaboss,
after watching that, I was really impressed with the way that he finished. And I know it's a grass sort-ish, you know, the Tapita is going to accentuate that closing kick. But the stride and all that kind of stuff, that's more what I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. And that was at 1.8 miles. The distance, to me, is not a problem for this horse.
Clearly.
So going forward, I see no reason he couldn't stretch out. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, he's by Street Boss. Do you know what's the dam side?
I'm trying to remember off
it's okay.
the top of my head.
If you don't know off the top of your head,
we
no
can look at it. Yeah. But Street Boss is that anomaly where, you know, did all his success was sprinting and right. all of his progeny excel going along. Danza, his sire was Street Boss.
Right.
I just think I'm at least intrigued by this horse, and I'm also intrigued by, because we have seen in the past, recently, you know, quote unquote turf slash synth horses go and win the Derby.
Animal Kingdom.
Animal Kingdom. Mm-hmm. He won for fun. Now, Animal Kingdom is a special horse. He could do everything. I'm not going to go that far and say that any of these ones are of that caliber, but you never know.
So the dam side, dam who I've never heard of, named Spinning Yarns, who was by Freehouse. Okay. He was a personal favorite of mine back in the 90s, one of the Silver Charms' big rival.
Okay.
If you remember those great races between those two. McCaffrey Homebred, maybe? But, Mr. and Mrs. John A. Toffin actually also bred Metaboss. So it's indecisive to me.
Okay.
I'm not going to look at this and say there's no way this horse will dirt. That was just my visual impression. Does any part of you consider Metaboss cracking the top five? I thought you were talking in a way
close.
Where you were maybe going to go there.
It was close. The only reason I'm going to say no is because I want to see what happens this weekend, because I've got
So many of yours running.
Two of them running this weekend. Young Johnny Be Good over here. He worked out the other day in an uninspiring. Now again, I shouldn't say uninspiring because I didn't see the workout. An uninspiring time of 103 flat.
Might just be what they were looking for, though.
They're running out of time. You got to get some points. And look, I don't think a 103. Owen Hardy knows more than I do, but you know, at some point we're gonna have to get him ready to go. And if these horses are showing up for the Tampa Bay Derby, I would not be opposed to them shipping him out to Santa Anita, because I don't think that San Felipe is coming up strong at all. Supposedly, I mean, you got Prospect Park.
Prospect Park's
whatever.
A big name.
Let him win. I got to run second. Get me points. I don't need to win right now. Get me in. Imperial runs, Frosted runs, Upstart. If Upstart runs a hole in the wind again, maybe we need to start looking at him a little bit more. I'm always going to be skeptical of the distance thing, but
yeah, that's people keep asking about that on Twitter. So I think it's worth another second of discussion.
Sure.
And yeah, I think all of our gut was sort of collectively that he was going to peak probably before the first Saturday in May, and that we didn't love him at a mile and a quarter, and given what our Derby lists are not, these are your five most likely Derby winners. These are horses we're tracking. So to me, even though he would certainly belong on many lists of most likely Derby horses Upstart, especially with another win this weekend, it still doesn't mean he's the kind of horse that we're going to be tracking for a potential bet.
No, I mean, that you sum it up pretty well. I mean, it's not necessarily that I don't question his talent. He's got talent.
Oh, yeah, and clearly. His accomplishments are tremendous. He ran great.
Do
in
I
the,
see him
in
stretching the, out to 10 furlongs? No, I don't. Not right now. He hasn't given me any reason to think they will. So
yeah, I've read some pedigree experts who think that it could be there on paper, but it's such a process, and the training is such a factor too, and. We'll see. I mean, maybe he'll prove us all wrong and go into the Derby and win. But I'm still a little skeptical, even if I feel like maybe part of me is being a little unfair in that. I just the way that I'm treating the list, I'm gonna hold fast and keep him out of there for a little bit longer.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, me too. And I've actually looked at the Fountain of Youth, and I'm excited for the race because I think Frosted is probably the most likely winner, or at least in my initial handicapping, that's kind of where I'm landing. But there's a long shot that I like a little. We'll get into on Friday. If I'm assuming this will be one of the four races we go into.
Let me think. Because last night I made out a line. I made out all my stuff for that race.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
You trying to figure out
out who this long shot is. If I had to guess. And you're thinking long shot as far as price is concerned, like when we break Saturday, like,
yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm like Gorgeous Bird's not a long shot.
No, I don't know the morning line. I have no idea what the morning line is.
I don't either. Pletcher's Horse isn't going to be a long shot. If I'm going back to the what was the other race?
Risen Star.
No, the
Holy
the
Bowl.
The Holy Bowl. Thank you. The only one out of that could potentially be a long shot, I would probably assume, based on the way that he ran the first turn, Juan and Bina, who was just ranker than rank, and he could never settle. Maybe Bluegrass Singer, who paired up Byers, maybe he can take a step forward. It's got to be one of those two. You don't need to.
No.
It's not.
No.
All right, tune in Friday.
Wow.
we're getting.
So that's setting the table for Friday. We've got public handicapper races. We'll have all that kind of stuff. And then we'll get into things when we come back next Wednesday. The plan right now is looking like we're only going to have a show next Wednesday.
Yeah, I think next Friday we'll put out our public handicapper picks on Twitter. Matt and I will be down at Gulfstream for the Raise Your Game Handicapping Challenge, be involved in some fun stuff down there. But the doesn't look like a pod for that Friday is going to be in the cards, unfortunately.
So like we said, that's kind of setting up Friday's show. Come back, enjoy. We'll chop up some races. Peace.